In January 2016, a 21-year-old University of Virginia student embarked on what was marketed as an extreme travel experience. He went on holiday with a tour company called Young Pioneer Tours. The destination? North Korea. That young man, Otto Warmbier, returned to the United States 18 months later in a coma. He died shortly after at the age of 22. Warmbier had been in Korea, held in Korea, for 17 months after the North Korean government accused him of, quote, committing a hostile act against the state, after a security video showed him allegedly attempting to steal a political poster from a restricted floor of his hotel in Pyongyang. After Warmbier's death, the U.S. State Department immediately issued a ban on American travel to North Korea, and President Trump declared that the North Koreans had tortured Warmbier, quote, beyond belief. As for the tour company, it's still up and running and offering similar experiences. Writer Kent Russell took a trip with that group, Young Pioneers Tours, and wrote about it in a piece for HuffPost Highline called The Disaster Tourist, that examines the ethics and practical realities of traveling to geopolitical fault lines around the globe. And I'm happy to say Kent Russell is in the studio, safe and sound.
Safe and sound. Thanks for having me.
The name of this group that he traveled with, how does it promote itself, Young Pioneers Tours?
So Young Pioneer, it's really, if you're not familiar with them, as I really wasn't until the Otto Warmbier catastrophe, they're pretty much exclusively, you know, online. You find them through social media, that, you know, they have a website, obviously. But really, it's a very kind of insular kind of customer base where if you're not kind of going on these trips, you may not happen, you know, across either Young Pioneer or similar companies. You know, there are all these new adventure or dark tourism companies have popped up. I mean, a former New York Times foreign correspondent runs one. You know, there's been a massive growth in these kinds of industries lately. And but yeah, it's kind of, you know, like a almost like a brotherhood or, you know, fraternal kind of thing where you really find out about them once you have an interest in going on these kinds of trips and start looking around and going on the trips themselves. And, you know, as I found out, I was the only person on this trip with YPT who, you know, not only had I never, I was the only one who hadn't been with YPT, but I was also, this was my first time doing, you know, that kind of trip. So it's really, you know, it's kind of a self-selecting kind of audience.
Right. You know or you know.
Yeah.
If you know,
exactly,
you know, right?
Exactly, yeah.
How long has it been around?
So YPT has been around for about a decade. Their founder is a British gentleman named Gareth, and unfortunately I was unable to speak with Gareth Johnson, but he was, you know, kind of like if you've ever kind of been abroad, you've definitely seen this kind of British man before, kind of like a roustabout, kind of fun-loving, you know, he may be passed out on a park bench in Prague or something like that, but you know, he was a kind of guy who traveled the world, either, you know, bartending on a cruise ship or teaching English in Korea or something like that. And, you know, he I guess you could say he kind of caught the travel bug. And, you know, he wanted to keep his current lifestyle going and wanted a way to, you know, make money and just kind of legitimize it. So he was in China, I believe, and, you know, found a kind of way, to say a way in North Korea makes it sound more like there was more subterfuge involved than there was, but he found a kind of way in North Korea that was cheaper than these other more official tour companies were using. And in his telling, you know, he went, he got drunk, he had a great time with people in charge of stuff, as he puts it. And yeah, in beginning then, you know, he started offering these cheap tours, cheaper and kind of a little more freewheeling for people like himself, for people who consider themselves kind of, you know, backpackers, people who, you know, kind of like to do things cheaply and experience, you know, the quote unquote more authentic way of wherever they happen to be. So yeah, for the past 10 years, they're now, I think, in their own estimation, they're the number two biggest tour provider to North Korea. And then obviously they've branched out into, you know, various other hot spots and dangerous locales and
Does it have to be a hot spot? It has to be a dangerous locale to be a YPT tour? Is that the idea?
The way they put it to me is they wouldn't go to these places if they were legitimately dangerous, is what they say. Whereas obviously, yeah, the news would kind of give the lie to that. But, you know, they scout out locations, they kind of do research trips. So while I went on the first ever trip to the unrecognized nation of South Ossetia, and then also the first ever international tour group to Chechnya, you know, the guide's already been there once, you know, to kind of make sure mm-hmm. everything isn't ridiculously unsafe. But yeah, so they'll also go to like Somaliland. They'll go to, you know, Iraqi Kurdistan. They'll go, you know, Iran. Basically, you know, any place that you can't really find your friends having posted about these places on Facebook or Instagram. You know, it's
That's sort of the badge of honor. Is that
exactly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before I get onto your trip, I did want to ask you about their response mm-hmm. to Mr. Warmbier's death.
Yes.
How did they respond? Did they take any responsibility? What was their reaction?
Their reaction was a little tricky. You know, they were a little bit silent on it at first, and then they issued a statement on Facebook, you know, where they basically said, you know, we are shocked and horrified at, you know, what has happened. They made it clear that they kind of have these disclaimers and all their, you know, documents. And if you go to North Korea, from what I understand, you kind of have to sign waivers and things like that. But, you know, they both expressed dismay while also kind of distancing themselves from any kind of responsibility for what happened. And there was also kind of, you know, the founder of the company in statements to journalists and in kind of like company statements made it seem as though he was more involved perhaps with the attempts to bring Otto home than he was. There was a bit of a brouhaha about him, you know, telling the Associated Press that he was still in North Korea, you know, attempting to have dialogues and perhaps, you know, do his part to get Otto home. When, if you looked on his Instagram, you know, a week after him making that statement, there he is holding, you know, a giant bottle of Jack Daniels in Pyongyang and, you know, saying like, I love North Korea, well, putting it to his mouth and stuff like that. So
taking a side after thinking about that. Just to give our listeners an idea of what kind of tours are promoting, I want to read a couple from their actual website, and then we'll talk about where you went. They're currently offering a North Korean May Day ultra budget tour to experience music, dancing, games, and best weather in Pyongyang. Yang, that's for €445. And they're also offering a Jordan the Business of War tour, which invites travelers to visit the ancient site of Petra. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And ride camels through the desert with Bedouin tribesmen. Okay. And it says literally, oh, and rub shoulders with royal and military men at the International Arms Fair.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That does sound about right.
Yeah.
All right. How was your tour built?
So as it was built, it was, you know, this would be a kind of, you know, a one-of-a-kind opportunity to be the first, you know, international tour to go through both of these spots.
Chechnya
and South Ossetia, right?
Okay.
And, you know, Chechnya, I studied Russian in college, you know, language, literature, so I had a little bit more of a grasp of Chechnya than I would imagine, you know, just somebody off the street. But even to me, the kind of mental images that Chechnya conjures, you know, is kind of war-torn, you know, just like a kind of unsafe space that, you know, is I think that there's a new, like, HBO show in which the hilariously inept bad guys are from Chechnya, you know? So it's still kind of like this shorthand for, you know, sketchy place. And it's funny, when you get there, like, that is not necessarily the case, right? And I mean, South Ossetia was a whole other story. That, you know, that we were literally the first group in there, so that there was just no kind of expectation. But with a lot of these places, I think, you know, that YPT goes, they may be marketing it as, you know, like go to the International Arms Expo or something like that. But what's interesting to me, and especially interesting to me because I'm from Florida, you know, and have worked in tourism jobs in Florida, so I've always kind of been very interested in tourism in general and thinking about it, is these places want tourists, obviously, right? Like Chechnya wants there to be tourists. We were meeting with ministers of tourism. You know, they were, one of our guides was direct messaging with the dictator Ramzan Kadyrov.
We'll talk about him in a minute.
Time. But, you know, it was, it was interesting to have both the desire to get people to go there, thinking that it will be this kind of, you know, wild, dangerous kind of expedition. And then also having the people on the other side being like, yeah, and tell your friends, you know, how much fun you had because we want more of you.
Yeah. Now, was there a State Department warning
issued?
Yes,
there was. Absolutely. Yeah. The I didn't know about this till I returned. I think it was my dad pointed it out to me. But the State Department said that, you know, I believe it was, if you are, you know, a U.S. government employee in Chechnya, leave immediately. You know, we can't help you, basically. Similarly, for South Ossetia, they said, you know, if you're a U.S. citizen, if you go there, you know, we can't extract you if something goes wrong. If you're, you know, arrested, held, kidnapped, you're on your own. If you get injured, mm-hmm. there's no, you know, no hospitals nearby. There's no way that, you know, we can assist you in any way. So it was basically a kind of, you know, well, good luck if you want to do any of these things.
Yeah, you described these kind of trips as, I mean, this is what you wrote, profoundly stupid, nay, monumentally irresponsible for an American to go traipsing along these geopolitical fault lines. Explain the irresponsibility factor.
Well, I mean, obviously the story of Otto, you know, if you read kind of the reports that came out after that, you know, he just, from the sound of it, wanted to, you know, have an interesting trip that kind of corresponded with what he was studying at the University of Virginia, right? And while I don't necessarily think that there's anything wrong with that, then there, you know, if you get held in Chechnya, or if you, you know, if I had like slid down the side of a mountain, mm-hmm. all of a sudden I might be on the nightly news, right? Where,
right.
you know, or if I happen to think I'm hailing a taxi and I get in the wrong car, and then, you know, what I thought was a fun jaunt or a lark or, you know, something to post funny pictures about online, now all of a sudden I'm on the crawler, you know, and that
you're a bargaining chip in some negotiation.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, what appears to be just, you know, some kind of laissez-faire, you know, oh, well, I'll take these risks on by myself. You know, it's in these kinds of trips, I don't think, you know, many people do keep it in the back of their mind, but I think it's important to keep in the back of your mind that, you know, that exact scenario, you know, could possibly happen. And then what seemed like you were just taking your own life in your hands, all of a sudden you have other people involved.
I'm talking to Kent Russell, his story from the HuffPost Highline, The Disaster Tourist. You traveled with, eight other people?
Ooh, it kind of fluctuated a little bit. It was less than a dozen, basically.
Now, this is my conjuring of, I think of young bros,
yeah,
like to drink,
yeah.
Flannel wearing guys.
Uh-huh.
Was that at least part of the group or all of the group?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely my preconception going mm-hmm. into it. And there's definitely a lot of truth to that. But what I found kind of interesting is, in speaking with the operators themselves, they said that, yeah, it's almost entirely from the English-speaking Western world, you know? So Australia, Europe, North America, they were kind of adamant that the worst travelers they get are Americans, so the ugly American stereotype's still alive. I don't know if I did anything to assuage that. but yeah, it's. I thought it would be more of a, like, a stag party vibe. But in fact, what I found is, on my trip at least, I was the second youngest. And, you know, it, older people, we had, you know, a retiree, and also everyone was a kind of a white collar professional. We had, you know, multiple accountants, we had doctors, we had,
Why did they say they wanted to do this?
Why
put yourself in a position of danger?
I think for a lot of them, and, you know, it was kind of interesting to try to wrap my head around their kind of, attitude towards travel, but there was kind of a completionist attitude for a lot of them where, you know, like I said, I was the second youngest. The youngest was only about a year younger than me. She was a Finnish doctor. And she was saying that, you know, she wanted to just have gone to 100 countries before her 30th birthday. So, you know, there was this kind of attitude of, you know, kind of, we got to collect all those passport stamps, you know. So whereas I'm, you know, I may have expected, and I myself may have gone for more of that kind of adventuresome and perhaps irresponsible rationale. For them, you know, this was just kind of like another, you know, another go round at the rodeo here. You know, it was, they had some, you know, scary stories about being in Somaliland or something like that, or Eritrea, you mm-hmm. know, but in general, you know, this was, it was almost like business as usual for them.
Sometimes when you get around reporters, they like to share their war stories, and some will embellish and some will not. And
yeah.
It's just like this badge of honor in a way. And I sort of got that vibe from reading your story that, like, I want to have 100 stamps on my mm-hmm. passport. I want to, as opposed to really thinking like, wow, I'm going into another country that has all kinds of geopolitical issues and maybe this shouldn't be for my entertainment.
Right, exactly. It was just so interesting because it's not as though the people, at least on my trip, were kind of completely ignorant of the context or, you know, the surrounding geopolitical aspects of it. But it just, you know, it just seemed like, you know, like they were clocking in. They were, it was almost as though they were professional travelers, you know, where for a lot of people, I think it's, you want to kind of, schedule travel or imagine trips that kind of work around your work, you know, your work life. Mm-hmm. And then you take your vacation and, you know, that's that. For them, I feel like they, it was the other way around, where for a lot of them, they scheduled their, you know, hospital schedules, or, you know, they would make sure that they're working with their clients or whatever it was fit around their travel schedules. So for them, travel was more of their like reason for being than anything else.
We're speaking with Kent Russell about a story for HuffPost Highlines, The Disaster Tourist. We'll hear about his trip to Chechnya in just a moment. This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after the break. This is Midday on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, back with Kent Russell. We're discussing this idea of disaster tourism. Now, Kent, you went out with Young Pioneer Tours, YPT. That was the same organization that Otto Warmbier went into North Korea with. You did. You went on this as a journalistic assignment, right? That
right,
was the original.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Did that change anywhere in, for you, where you found yourself kind of getting absorbed into the extreme traveler mode?
Yeah, I mean, that's I made sure that they knew from the outset that I wanted to participate in this as, you know, a writer, as somebody who was possibly and most probably going to write about it. And I think that what kind of happened is, you know, for all of my, you know, desire to kind of remain more aloof, the nature of those kinds of trips, it just kind of sucks you in. You know, it's almost like a strange like high school quality to it, where, you know, you're just around these people nonstop. And of course, for YPT, a big selling point is there will be alcohol. You know, there will be a lot of alcohol. So, yeah, it quickly became this kind of, you know, gung-ho. We're all here together, and we're all also just drinking a bunch. So
your first stop was Chechnya.
Mm-hmm.
It's been in violent conflict for centuries.
Correct, yeah.
When you say Chechen, people think tough.
Mm-hmm.
Did your chaperones live up to those expectations?
Yeah, they definitely did. They both gentlemen were named Muhammad, so, you know, we just took as a shorthand for calling them one and two, for Muhammad number one, Muhammad number two, and they were both, you know, former, the Chechens, as Muhammad number two was fond of telling us, they love, you know, wrestling and kind of fighting sports and bodybuilding and stuff like that, and he himself was a former kickboxer. Whereas our other guide, Muhammad number one, who was actually the more of the guide than the translator, he had traveled, you know, abroad in Russia and to the United States himself. And what was interesting is to see how his own kind of nationalistic Chechen attitudes had softened considerably.
Really?
Compared, yeah, even to Muhammad number two, who had, you know, really never traveled outside of Russia. So it was quite interesting to see kind of the juxtaposition of those two. But yeah, a strong mountain people.
What was promised to you on this part of the trip?
It was, I think, the literature for YPT kind of painted a picture of where, you know, this is a place that has been almost completely destroyed, at least in terms of Grozny, the capital. You know, it's been something like 97-99% rebuilt. So I think the advertising materials were playing up the idea of let's go check out a place that has just recently been in, you know, these two of, as you said, a long centuries line of, you know, these brutal wars, and let's just see how regular life is beginning to recommence now. But I think that for some of my travel mates, you know, there was the sense of, aw shucks, we kind of wanted a little bit more like rawness to this, you know. Because Ramzan Kadyrov, the president for life, there basically is kind of Vladimir Putin's, you know, one of his favorite strongmen. He has been receiving all this, you know, federal aid, and as such, Chechnya has just been, you know, rebuilt quickly and, you know, with a certain level of opulence. I remember one of my YPT guides remarking how it looked more like, you know, Turkmenistan than any other part of the former Soviet Union, because it had been razed, they had received all this money, and now they were able to, you know, just rebuild. So it looked, you know, fairly new.
One of the things that was interesting is, were you ever promised a meeting with Kadyrov?
That was, from what I understand, was completely of the two YPT guides. That was of their own volition there, where one of them had Instagram followed Ramzan Kadyrov and I guess despite the fact that he has more Instagram followers than subjects in his republic, decided to follow her back. She was a young Ukrainian woman, and like I said, I had studied a little bit of Russian in college, so I was the only other person aside from her on this whole trip who could actually kind of understand what was being said. So she was, you know, the only link between our YPT guide, who was an Irishman, everyone else who was, you know, Western European or Australian or from New Zealand, and our, you know, Chechen host. So our translator followed Kadyrov. He followed her back. I'm not sure why. And they just started direct messaging one another. And, you know, with our guide kind of looking over her shoulder, telling her what to say, they began a little back and forth with the kind of express purpose of, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we got a meeting with Ramzan Kadyrov while we're here?
It didn't happen.
It got far enough to where his Kadyrov's, I believe at the time he was something like the, you know, the minister of either tourism or like young people's endeavors.
Did anyone in the group express concern about meeting with this guy? He's a strongman. They're violently anti-gay in Chechnya. Did people think like, hey, maybe this isn't a great idea to have a picture of my arm around this guy and put it on Instagram?
Yeah, I posed that question after Ramzan had sent his, you know, one of his henchmen to come meet us and check us out. And I tried to pose the question of, does anybody else feel a little bit icky about this? You know, because those were thoughts that I was having as to what would I even want to ask him? Would I want to kind of confront Ramzan Kadyrov? Would I want to do my journalistic duty, or would I not want to get disappeared, you know? And so I think my travel mates, I don't think that it wasn't that they hadn't thought of it. I just think that, you know, they didn't seem to share those same concerns. Or if they did, they just didn't mention them.
What happened when the subject of Otto Warmbier came up?
I think, you know, my YPT guides were, I wouldn't say defensive, but they just wanted to kind of forcefully explain that, you know, they're not the only ones to have ever had, you know, from, in their words, they weren't the only ones to have ever had something go wrong there, you know? So they wanted me to understand that. As for my fellow travelers, you know, I think that they probably had less sympathy for him than I was expecting.
Oh, interesting.
I think that they thought, you know, the kind of guiding philosophy for all this, be it YPT or the people who go on the trips, is it's this kind of like laissez-faire, like, well, you know, you're taking your life in your hands, or you're accepting this responsibility. And, you know, if something bad happens, you know, one out of a million, you know, chance that something bad will happen. If it does happen, you know, them's the breaks, and you knew what you were getting into going in. So that kind of thing. So I think that for my fellow travel mates, there wasn't a tremendous amount of sympathy. And though the actual, you know, what may have transpired that night is still shrouded in mystery, you know, that was another thing that YPT made sure to emphasize with me, is that they know as much as we do, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
do you believe them?
I do believe that they don't really know what happened.
Yeah.
I don't believe 100% of what they told me, but I do believe that they, you know, did, I think that they were way in over their heads. You know, they are young, you know, young-ish, you know, just kind of Western 20-somethings. I don't think that they, you know, knew what to do. I don't think that, you know, I think it was kind of a kind of stark wake-up call, where all of a sudden this is no longer a joke, you know, or it's no longer a lark, where we're here, and in fact, you know, there could be ramifications at, you know, the drop of a hat. But yeah, they and the travel goers seem to be more of the mind that, like, well, he probably did something to deserve it, you know?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And then the sort of the them's the breaks, but them's the breaks could turn into them's the international incident.
Yeah.
Did anyone have that, put that together? There seems to be a disconnect there.
Yeah. I think perhaps it may have just been I was the only American. So, you know, I feel like while we were on this trip, this was also when Trump responded to North Korea, you know, as a kind of a continuing story since the Otto Warmbier incident. This is when Trump, you know, had his fire and fury comments.
You were actually on the trip when that happened.
Yeah, uh-huh. And so, you know, the idea was more of like, well, look at what your president is doing, man. You know, like, that would, I think the kind of tacit idea was that wouldn't have happened, you know, I'm from the Netherlands, like, that this wouldn't have led to, you know, perhaps World War III, just because, you know, you wanted to, you know, shine the head of a statue or something. So I think it people thought that, you know, it was that Otto's Americanness had more to do with what was happening than if, you know, perhaps something, if they made a misstep in North Korea or something like that.
We're speaking with Kent Russell. He went on one of these young pioneer tours, the same one that Otto Warmbier was in when he was held by the North Korean government. I'm sort of curious about the people that live in these places and see these bright, shiny faces coming along with their smartphones, taking pictures. What is the reaction? Are they welcoming? Are they? I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes you'll see somebody take a picture at a disaster scene. You think like, oh, why are you doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was interesting in Chechnya because we were the first. Like as they told us, I mean, they could, you know, have just been humoring us, but they kept telling us again and again, we were the first group of internationals to come through. So, you know, people from multiple different Western countries. So Russians, you know, ethnic Russians, non-Chechens had been coming into Chechnya for some time. And the Chechens were just happy that we weren't Russian is what the response I got. You know, when we would visit mosques or, you know, visit a museum to the Kadyrov family or something like that, you know, Chechens, if they assumed we were Russian, would be, you know, kind of more curt, or they would think that, you know, they would just be seemingly more angry with us. Whereas, you know, once they heard that we were, you know, not Russian, pleased as punch.
What about in South Ossetia?
Less so, because they, you know, the idea was that we ultimately met with the Minister of Tourism in South Ossetia. So I think the idea was that they would like to have tourists, but because we were kind of the first ones to go in there, and that, as opposed to Chechnya, which has been completely rebuilt, South Ossetia was still very much raw and, you know, bombed out buildings and fields of rubble. You know, you could go stick your hole through, you know, an ordnance hole that a tank shot into an apartment building and stuff like that. So it was very much more raw there. And I think because it was both raw and the people had no experience with the tourism, they did have that idea of, you know, what are you doing here? This is still our lives. You're taking pictures of the worst day of our lives, you know.
You should check out the article. It's on Highline on the HuffPo. Kent Russell, thank you so much. It's fascinating. Glad you're back safe.
Oh, thank you for having me.